Hello, everyone. So, I've got an interview today that I've been waiting for this entire week. We've got Dustin Bogle with us, sales expert, multi-location gym owner, and former pro wrestler. So we're gonna get into that a little bit now. Dustin, great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. Excited to be on the show. And I always laugh at my intro because I'm like, who is this guy? What a weird, wacky background. But that's me. That's Dustin. So we'll be diving into it, I'm sure.
Now, I'm going to have to put our names at the bottom in case people confuse us, because we've both got blue eyes. We've both got a full set of hair and a wonderful full beard as well. So just before people are confused, I'm this one with the headphones on. Okay, that's Nicholas. So, Dustin, yes. So whereabouts in the world are you based?
So I have moved to the Dallas, Texas area just a few years ago, born and raised most of my life in SoCal, but now I'm a official Texan. I had to put my hand on the Bible when I came and swear that I'm going to eat brisket and buy a gun and, you know, all that stuff. So, and root for the Cowboys. So yeah, I'm officially a Texan now.
So I've got to ask, out of those four things, have you ticked all the boxes, or is brisket still off the menu?
Yes. Yes, I got a smoker. I actually love brisket. I do actually own guns, and I didn't own it when I lived in California. And we went to a couple Cowboys games. So, yes.
I love it.
But yeah. Well, we're officially all in.
I'm seeing a lot of folks are moving down to Texas, especially Austin, which is becoming quite a comedy capital in the States because of sort of less, slightly more open in terms of free speech, which I love. So, yeah, a good move, I guess. So, I want to, just so that people have context, this is a digital marketing show. So we talk about marketing in particular. So we're going to touch a little bit on your book, which is Reinforce Your Gym. And your background is in gyms. You've got six gyms in SoCal, Southern California, as you mentioned, and you help gym owners in their business. So let's talk about, first of all, a bit about your background and how you got into opening gyms in one of the most competitive gym markets in the entire world.
Yes. Yeah. No, great, great question. And it's funny because I was talking to a business owner and I was just reflecting on how I've been going through these level ups and, you know, just that's the sign of a growth minded person. Like, you know, not only are we always saying to ourselves things like it's not enough, more, more, more. But we're always trying to just challenge ourselves. That's what we like about growth, is that you get to unlock new things within you that you didn't know were possible. And so like the short version was like, first got myself in shape, became a trainer, then years later opened a gym, then eventually went to six gyms, then eventually went to a B2B service for gym owners, and now have a B2B service for all service-based owners. And then the final thing is I'm going to be going this year into an investing and actually acquiring businesses. So it's like, that's the quick timeline, but to kind of give a little bit more context, you know, it was in high school where I started my fitness journey. I was very overweight and, you know, 60 pounds overweight and didn't have any confidence. And a buddy asked, do you want to go to the gym with me? I'd go every day after school. And I think he could sense that I was like really craving some bonding, some leadership, some companionship and, you know, man time. And so went to the gym and I got addicted to the first workout and proceeded to lose 60 pounds of fat and get visible abs. I had a nice big layer of fat over those abs. I did not see them. And I said, oh my God.
Can I just give for context for people who don't know what pounds are? That's a whole Backstreet Boy. So yeah, carry.
Yeah, no. So yeah, we got to keep it worldwide, right? We got to talk imperial and metric. But yes, essentially I ended up losing quite a bit of weight and then decided that, oh my God, this feels so fantastic. Life is just better. Like I'm walking prouder. I'm thinking better words about myself. I used to say really mean things when I saw myself in the mirror. I didn't hide from the camera. And I wasn't afraid of having my picture taken. Like there's just these weird things and people who have extra weight on them know the hacks, right? You wear a shirt when you go in the pool, you don't go shirtless. You always say, I'll take the picture. I don't want to be in the group being the picture taken. There's all these little like behavioral things we do to try to smoke screen it. But the truth is we just need to take ownership and take over our health. And I wanted to help people do that, but also make fitness more appealing and not make it so intimidating. And like, it's always these big mean trainers crossing their arms and saying like, come on, I'm going to kick your butt and I'm going to blow my whistle and yell at you. It's like, why can't we have fun? Why can't we be friends? Why can't this be like a cool hangout? Like when people go to the bar, except we're going to go to this bar, we're going to lift barbells, right? And so that's what I wanted to create. And that's why I think I opened as many gyms as I did, because that was our differentiator. It wasn't we had new equipment. It wasn't that we did some sort of crazy fitness modality. We just made it a fun place to be. We made it everyone's third home. You know, there's that old show Cheers. We wanted to be Cheers without the beers, right? Where everybody knows your name. And so people loved it. And then I did have to learn the skill of marketing, because it, to be honest, this is not something people want. Like, even if I put a fun spin on it, they're still thinking I'm going to be sore. I'm going to be sweaty. I got to sacrifice my favorite foods. This is not a desirable thing to people. I'm not selling pizza and concert tickets and movies. And so I had to learn the skill of marketing and how to convey why you want to come to this gym. And this is something you need, not something that you should do like brushing your teeth. And so I had to go all in and learn digital marketing. And it did help me to open my gyms with anywhere from 200 to 300 members on day one. And so we were profitable. And it was just like, team, now you take it from here. You run the operations. I'm going to the next town to repeat. And that's how we did one a year, did 6 gyms in 6 years.
Wow. Now, I often say that marketing isn't brain surgery. And
yeah,
if I look at folks like yourselves who are operators, so you started a business, were you a marketing genius when you started out? How did you get yourself up and running with marketing?
So this was in the heyday when Facebook ads kind of first came out, like the early 2010s. It's kind of funny. I was like, what do we call the decades now? It's like the 80s, the 90s. And then we got like the 10s. Do we start over the 10s and the 20s and the 30s? Anyways, like 2012, Facebook ads are becoming really, really popular. You're getting really low cost per lead, because like no gyms or no businesses for that matter are running ads. So I'm getting like dollar leads and they're going to the page and they're checking out on their own. And it's like zero follow-up. So I'm just creating like a flood of people constantly walking in. Now the game has changed. People have been marketed to death on Facebook and Instagram. You need lead nurture. You need to get people on the phones. But back then I could just, it was like printing money. And so essentially I didn't know I needed to learn this until I joined different masterminds and groups where other people told me. It was not even in my awareness. I just saw an ad. I was like a regular consumer. I just saw them, but I didn't know how you do them. I didn't know how you start one. I just literally operated off of word of mouth only in the beginning. And then I just knew I'm a first generation business owner. It's not like my parents are leading me. I didn't have any friends that had a business. So I should go hire an expert to teach me how to build this thing bigger and better and make it an actual business. So I joined masterminds, I hired mentors, and that's where I got exposed to like, oh, you're not running ads. Like, come on. And like, people would almost like laugh at you. Like, what are you doing? Come on, this is the way to do it. And so that's the value of mentorship, is that you don't know what you don't know, right? You're just flying blind. And then I went home and started doing this. And that's when I started to really get excited about it, and where I almost, from that day going forward, that was like what I wanted to spend the majority of my time on. It actually made me like leapfrog, because at that point when I opened my first gym, I was already 6 years in, and then I went a couple of years without running ads. And so it's like, at that point I was 8 years into doing fitness coaching. I was ready to exit it and let my team run on sessions. And I wanted to be the guy owning the marketing. And I really got obsessed and started going down that rabbit hole and learning more and more about it.
You spoke about masterminds and mentors. It's something with I try and promote to my students is building your network and surrounding yourself with people in an industry who know slightly more than you. And the masterminds almost sounds like a cult or a secret society, like the Masons, because it's this, you know, closed group of people who have got this knowledge and wisdom. And it's very important, because you've got this group of folks who you can talk about your problems, talk about your challenges, and get unfiltered feedback. And I think a lot of people think that success is going to land on your lap, and if you pray hard enough, or if you wait for the universe to bring it to you, it's going to happen. But it's network, and it's other people. Nobody is an island, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
So, okay, now let's talk a little bit about your book. So you've been in the industry for about 15 years. And what prompted you to craft your book?
Yeah, that again was like part of that whole like wanting to level up and do things that I'd never done. And I read a lot. I read thousands of books. And so I always had it in my mind, man, it'd be cool. And it was as I got more and more access to people who were actually, you know, authors, and they were showing me how to do it. So again, going back to that mentor and mastermind, things seem very intimidating when you have no idea. But when someone just shows you steps 1, 2, and 3, it becomes a lot more bite-sized and doable. And you're like, oh, I just got to do that. And then I do that. And then I do that. And it's like, that's where we start to get momentum and confidence. And we've probably heard a lot of people, especially since they're business professionals, have heard this kind of 3 C's that feed into each other. It's, you know, having confidence and then courage and then competence, right? So it's like confidence just comes from someone else telling you, you got this, or you only need to do step 1, and it's just enough to get going. You feel confident in doing that. And then you also need, after that, the courage to step into it, because you could be very confident. Like, I very much know what I need to do. Like, if we made a test here, we're like, hey guys, this is exactly how you start a business. You got to go and you got to, you know, register with XYZ. Well, then the next test is who has the courage to do it, right? Everyone knows what to do. They're confident in step 1, but who has the courage to do it is a separator. And then you jump blindly into something and you become competent just by doing reps. And so you don't know how to sell. We're like, okay, step 1, pick up the phone, use this script. Courage is somebody dials 100 calls in an hour. Another person calls 3. One person had more courage than the other. And then the other part that's great is the courageous person then is also going to do more reps, and they're going to gain more competence because they're doing more reps than the person who lacked the courage. So you got to do those 3. And then what's cool is as you gain competence, it feeds your confidence even more, which gives you more courage, which gives you more competence. And then it becomes this ongoing cycle. And so in terms of, like, you know, anything in life, whether it's like me learning how to coach a session or how to run ads or anything like that, that's the process that we went through. And so what I wanted to, you know, really kind of point out here to the audience, especially because they're in a marketing, is that might be you going to a new platform. You might feel, you might have the confidence, the courage, and the competence to run Facebook ads, but you're like, now I got to go learn YouTube, or now I got to learn TikTok, and you're back to your first version of you, and that's okay. What's step 1? Well, where do you click to open to start an ad, right? And then it's like courage, load your first one and be okay, it might fail. And then either it does fail, okay, you got a rep under your belt, or maybe it's a winner. Now you got another rep under your belt, and you just keep repeating the cycle. And so a lot of people get hung up on the details when they just need to follow those 3 steps. So like, why did I write the book? It was because it was one of those things that's like, I want to challenge myself. I want to do things that are scare me and I've never done. But now that I did 1, I was like, man, now I could see myself. I could write 1 every couple of years. And now I got that confidence, right? And that competence and the courage. And so I wrote it because it was one of those things that I wanted to pack in 20 years of what I learned as a gym owner to another gym owner that I could give it to him in a bite-sized chunk. And I like books because they are a practice in focus. Like, podcasts and YouTube is great, but you can do it distracted. You can listen to it while you work out, while you're doing dishes. And I don't think you retain the information. If I ask somebody, that podcast you just last listened to, the most recent one, you have to teach it. Most people would freeze and not have retained enough to teach it. But if I say that book you read, you need to teach me 3 takeaways, most people would have those 3. And it's because in books, they have repetition. So they make their point over and over again. So it really drills in, and you have to be focused. Like, you get distracted, you want to work on something, and you have to bring your focus back to the pages. People retain, in my opinion, the most through doing and through reading. I think those are the top 2 for retaining information. So that's why I chose to go that path, you know, with writing the book.
Well, there's some phenomenal parallels that you've discussed there between the gym process or coaching and real life. And one of the points there is, if you've done your first ad, that feeling of once you've done your first ad and you get some kind of response, that sort of those endorphins that you get are the same as pushing yourself to do your first bit of weightlifting or something and achieving it, that sort of that feeling. And it's the same, I guess, where you can't do 1 ad or 1 promotion expect that you are now a big business or that business is going to be successful. It's practice, and it's finding the right fit for you and repetition. So I think, you know, anyone who's looking at starting a business or improving their business would definitely be able to take some great lessons from this. And I'm sure you've got some great anecdotes and some other stories in the book as well that can give examples of exactly that. So you're a proper coach. So a real life coach. And I suppose that's Thanks. Why business coaches are called coaches, because it's exactly what you're talking about. You know, taking your 20 years of skills and various situations and being able to apply that to, you know, other folks' individual challenges. Now, when we talk about your six gyms that you opened, and I like franchising and discussions around franchising, how did you make sure that you were able to deliver the same experience and the same feeling as your first restaurant, I mean, in your first gym, as in the other six that you created? What are some of the challenges that you went through? Was it easy? Did you have a manual that you could just hand over to the next lot, or how was that process?
Oh, so that's where the failure begins, because people hear that and it's almost like me setting up myself for the punchline, which is, then the big pain begins, which is I was wrongfully believing it's fitness equipment and coaches, and then Dustin's going to make it ramen marketing and happy days, we're all going to make a bunch of money. But the truth is, I did not think through, because I didn't know, I was unaware, the need for skilled leadership. I didn't have a manager in place at many of these gyms. And if I did, they were just like the most experienced coach. So just like through seniority, they took control of the location. And that was a poor decision, because a lot of times, because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you're good at something else. And so they were poor managers. And this is where the culture pain started to show up. People being late, people kind of wearing like a Nike t-shirt to coach sessions versus our brand. Like, and so uniform issues, whatever. And so culture issues. And so I was like, man, why is this so hard? It was so easy for me when I was on site at location one. And then mentors started to point out, because you were the magic, you were the owner. You cared about this business. Your name was on the lease. All your chips were in. You had everything to lose. And these are employees. They're different. They're just there for the safety of a paycheck. And they're not there thinking about the vision of where we're going to be in 5 or 10 years. They're just like, I need to get through today. And then if you have people like that and you don't have managers and leaders holding the standard on culture and the way we do things, people start to slip on those things, right? It's like when the mice is away, or the cat's away, the mice will play. And at this point, I'm not going to my location. Maybe more than once a week, I'll visit each location. And most of them were kind of positioned where like that two were over here, two over here, so they can support each other. So I'd go to that area and I'd visit those two that day. And the next day I'd go visit the other two. But most of the time I'm thinking about marketing or where's the next one going to be. And so I had to get humbled and realize, holy crap, full stop. We're not expanding anymore. We have a major leadership deficit and I have to build leaders. I got to turn my brain from marketing to leadership growth. And I got to teach everyone how to be better leaders, how to lead with positivity. Because some of them were leading with negativity. Like, if you don't do this, I'm going to write you up. You're going to get fired. And so it's like, they just didn't know how to lead. You know, in all fairness, they were inexperienced managers. We hired them to be a coach. They're really good at coaching people. And they thought the best way to manage people was to be the rule person and to drop the hammer on them. And so that's where we started to have struggles around growth. We actually had to sell a couple of locations because we couldn't find the right team. And we also put them in places that were super highly competitive and we just didn't want to play that game. And so I like going into B markets. So like most people would want to go open in an A market, like Chicago, Dallas. I want to be in the suburbs right outside that, because I'm going to get my real estate at a good price. I'm going to hit a lot of homes, you know, a lot of people that are at home. So a lot of density of population of people that usually have two incomes. You go down to a downtown city, there's going to be a lot of single people with single incomes and they're just living the single life. So in fitness, you know, again, it might differ based on what kind of industry you're in. That's not who I'm looking for. It's not my ideal customer. My ideal customer hits the most pain in their 30s and 40s. They're starting to pack on weight. They're getting busy with the life of having kids and a spouse and work, and they need a quick, fast fitness solution where somebody who's younger, they might be able to eat whatever they want, not put on pounds. And so for them, a fitness membership is valued very low and they're not in a high point of pain. So that was the learning lesson within my locations that you know, we had to go through for scaling.
It's quite audacious for you to have started even your first gym. So let's go back to early days. I mean, like you said, it's a very competitive market. And what possessed you? I know it's America and everyone is supposed to start their own business, but why didn't you go the safe route and work for somebody? Why did you take the tough route of starting your own business with all of the headaches that it entails? And what have been the benefits of doing that?
Yeah. It's funny. I had a almost full-time job as a trainer. They had me 30 hours a week and I kept begging them, give me 40, give me full-time. And they just said, it's not in the cards. It's not in the budget. And I think that at that point I was getting married, and usually like life events pull a different gear out of people. You're having a kid, you bought a house, you bought a car, you're getting married. Suddenly you got to step up your game. It's not just you and covering your bills. And so I was getting married at that time. I wanted more income. I wanted more safety. And it's actually the best thing that ever happened to me, Nicholas, because I think if they gave me 40 hours, I'd still be there to this day, because it was a very cushy job. Like, they went to Costco and they loaded the fridge up with food and we got lunch for free and we got plenty of vacation time and I was well paid. And like, it was a place that you could get very comfortable and be feeling really good about yourself. Like, I made it, I'm the man. But something inside me just said like, hey, I really want to go and I want to just do things my own way and not have this glass ceiling. Cause that's the other thing. 40 hours would have been the ceiling. There wouldn't have been anything beyond that. And so I think that's what gets most people to have, you know, the term like an entrepreneurial seizure, where you're literally, I can't take another day of being an employee. That's it. I got to go take, you know, the risk is just knowing that even if people make exactly the same working for themselves or somebody else, I think they would take it. And what's crazy is they're working more hours because in their mind, there's just no glass ceiling. I think that's the number one thing companies can do to keep people longer when they see they have that entrepreneurial spirit, is give them some way to make more without a glass ceiling. And even if they don't, at least they won't perceive a glass ceiling and they'll stay longer. And so it's like, can they get a piece of the company? Can they get rev share? Can they have, you know, unlimited commissions, like something? But like, my company didn't. And so I knew, I don't like this glass ceiling feeling. I'm going to go and do it. And I've always had a high risk tolerance and you know, there's a lot of traits. The young me didn't know what to call it till I got into business and learned. I just thought, you know, I'm just Dustin. I'm this crazy guy. I take chances. I start things. And then it's like, the more and more I learn the label, it's like, you're just an entrepreneur. Like, you have high risk tolerance. You don't like being told what to do. You don't like rules. Like, these are all the telltale signs that you're an entrepreneur and you, you know, want to be a business owner. So yeah, it was definitely scary, but I got to say, I was more of a safer person to jump into it than most. Some people do it with zero income, zero plan. I actually started training people when I got off work at the gym. I would actually train people in my garage at night, and I got up to 40 clients training me to do personal training. I built my 3-car garage into a pretty nice gym, and I had enough clients where I'm like, I have enough revenue that it's going to cover my lease and then still be profitable. And so that's what gave me the confidence. So again, the three C's, like, I didn't have courage with $0 coming in. I actually had a steady amount, and that gave me the courage to take the leap and do it. So I think that most people can kind of ease their way into it by having side hustles or like a baby version of their business before they go for the monster version. And that's going to make you feel better about it. And you're also your spouse, if you have one, because they have a proven track record. They're like, yeah, on the weekends you've developed this. Could you imagine if you did it full time? But when you have no leg to stand on, you made no money. Yes, it's going to make everyone around you freak out. And the good owners would still kind of, or entrepreneurs would still succeed. But most people would do better if they just get some proven track record to build up their confidence and their courage, you know?
So I suppose the gym parallel could be sitting down and trying for your first time, trying to bench press 300 pounds. Yeah.
Yes,
you might want to. It's gonna crush you.
So
I want to talk a bit about your business. So I went to your website, and I was very unhappy that there weren't any gym jokes or gym puns or names about barbells and that. It was very businesslike. So maybe you can add some gym references or coaching references in there one day. But let's talk about the skills that you've learned in your own entrepreneurial journey and opening your gyms and being in these mastermind sessions. Why have you moved now into this online business of yours? And maybe just discuss it a little bit in terms of what you do.
Yeah, I think I just got smarter about business. I realized how much overhead is in brick and mortars, and I don't want to have all that overhead. And it's so nice having an online business because it's like softwares and payroll, and you know, you're in business. And so, you know, there's more than that. I'm kind of joking, but for the most part, a brick and mortar is very, very cost, you know, heavy. And so you got to really make sure you're bringing in a lot of money and you're priced right. But I think what really, for a lot of brick and mortar businesses, kind of, you know, put a strain on them, it was COVID. You know, even though we're 4 years past that, and I don't like to say the C word, I thought my guess would be things would be more in favor of the tenant post that, because they would have been like scarred and they would lower their prices. And I was really shocked to see commercial prices skyrocket, and it was the complete opposite direction. I thought, I'm getting back to growing, baby. Like, there are all these businesses, they say closed, they're going to be begging for leases, I'm going to get back to opening a ton of gyms. And now I look at it, I'm like, I don't think I'd open another one in California anytime soon, right? Maybe ever, because of how crazy the pricing got. So that's the beauty, is like, online businesses make the bar really low for anyone to come in and start. But because there's so many, you actually have to be good. You know, like, you kind of get a little bit of a forgiveness in the fitness. Like, people will know based on your price, you're a beginner. If you say, hey, I'm $20 for a personal training session, they're like, why so cheap? Like, well, I got my certification last month. It's like, okay, I'll be your guinea pig. But then you say, I'm $100 an hour. It's like, you better have 5 certs. You better have 10 years experience. You better have a wall of transformation photos that you've produced. And now you have status and you have the ability to charge that. So same thing with online. Like, a lot of people come in and they get sucked into thinking they can match you or somebody else and charge high ticket prices. But they just started last month. And it's like, don't miss that 10-year window, right? Like, it's just like the business owners doing well, didn't start and then successful. There was this 10-year grind between, and people want to hopscotch that. And it's like, no. You got to charge low because that's your value you're bringing. You're not bringing a lot of value. You don't know what you're doing. You're going to make a mess. You're going to learn, and you're going to gain confidence and courage, and you're going to raise your prices as you also gain that. And then fast forward 10 years from now, and you'll be doing a lot better. But these days, again, people are really short patience-wise, and so they want to leapfrog that 10-year gap. And you know, there are outliers. There are people that become, you know, mega successful pretty quick. But don't forget, those are outliers. That is not normal. You are not going to be Logan Paul and have a prime, you know, kind of a mega success. And, you know, it's valued at $1 billion and they released it last year. It's like, that's probably not going to happen to you. If it does, I'm very happy for you. But like, if that's your expectation, you'll be very frustrated. And we've seen it. They've done interviews and they said most people under 20 or under 20 think they'll be a millionaire by 24. And that's just warped expectations for everybody.
I always talk about the overnight success of 10 years as well. So all of these companies like Google, Tesla, et cetera, they were overnight successes. It seemed like they were overnight successes, but there's 10 years of hard graft, exactly as you mentioned, behind that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so the business offering. So you are helping take some of the learnings that you've had in your career into your online business. And I guess you're talking about the ceiling and the cost of property in California and, you know, perhaps in Dallas as well is quite excessive. So you've now kicked that ceiling up a little bit further, because there's sort of no limit to basically how many clients you theoretically could have with your online business.
Yeah. And that's another beauty of online, is now you opened up your net, or what they call, you know, TAM, total accessible market, is the US, or it's worldwide, depending on what service you offer. But when you're brick and mortar, you're, you know, 5 mile radius. And a lot of times, if you want to, you have really high financial goals, like many of us do, you need multiple locations to hit that. And you're not going to normally hit it from one location. And so you need 3, you need 5, you need 10, you need to become a franchisee. And so that's essentially, you know, why I keep always trying to punch up in my career as an entrepreneur, is move on to the next big TAM. And so for me, it was, one location, let's make this mega successful. Awesome. Now let's do two. Now let's do four. Now let's do six. Okay. And then now it's, hey, let's get into what we do good in the gym, because there's a lot of different aspects. There's marketing, there's sales, there's coaching fulfillment, there's retention. I mean, there's fitness equipment. You can go so many angles. It was like, I'm really good at the marketing and sales. So I'm going to take that and turn it into a B2B offering for my world, my niche, which is fitness. And so started there. And yeah, basically it's sales reps that we've trained on how to sell fitness and how to overcome the common objections that go into the CRM of the gym and do all the outbound and inbound messaging to make trial sales happen. You know, so if they sell a 6-week challenge or a 21-day trial, our team will go in and close those deals in their CRM. They're collecting the money, not us. We, you know, they're just paying our service fee, but they can pretty much call us, like, you know, a hotline for a sales rep, and they don't have to do their own recruiting, their own training. Like, usually that's not the owner's favorite. They're usually like me, my early days, where they love the coaching. They like fitness. They like, you know, giving people workouts, keeping people motivated. And that is what fills their cup. They're like, oh man, lead nurture. I got to call these people from the ads and I got to sell them. Like, this is no fun. This is not why I opened a gym. And so that's what they say is, like, for the most harmonious working relationship is you take stuff that drains you and you find someone that they love it and it energizes them. And either you hire that person on your team or you outsource it to an agency or company that'll do it for you. But like, that's the secret to longevity. Cause, you know, again, 20 years in fitness, 12 as a gym owner. How do you do the same industry and the same kind of niche for so long? It's you protect your energy and make sure you're doing the things you love and you delegate the things you don't. And so that's what I love. I love to take on the things that gym owners don't love. And then it's a harmonious relationship. Like, we're not a bill that's like a bill that they hate. It's a bill they look forward to. It's like, oh yeah, it's kind of like your cleaner. Like, a lot of people are not mad about their janitor bill. They're happy that they are doing it and they're doing it with a smile versus them having to do it in the name of saving money. So we want to be that, you know, they're lead nurturers.
Well, I love that you are, again, keeping the coaching analogy, you've gone from, you know, being the coach in a physical environment now to being an online coach. And obviously I think that being in that specific niche is super important. And the growth opportunities for you are fantastic. What is next? What is next for Dustin? Because you've done your early training. So you've been a professional wrestler, which we haven't touched on. You've started and opened up multiple gyms. You've written a book. You've started an online business. You're obviously making a fortune being a host of a podcast as well. So what's next for you, Dustin, in the next sort of year or two?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, I mean, I really just come to terms that, like, my sweet spot is service-based businesses. Like, it's, you know, that's the next TAM that I'm moving up to, is like, how can I help anybody with a service-based business? Cause they're all the same. So if it's home services, like landscape, HVAC, pest control, like, they all need lead nurturers. They need, you know, follow-up done and they're with their leads. Online businesses, course creators, coaches, you know, agencies, anybody that operates off of appointments, and, you know, hair salons, like, most service-based businesses need appointments. They need people to show up to those appointments. They need those appointments closed. Like, that's just the overarching model. So what we're tackling with our sister company, Remote Reinforcements, is we're going into that broad service-based industry. So going from the gym niche, which I know really well, but I also believe I've learned enough about business that I can apply it to any type of service-based business. So that's what is waiting for us in 2024. Is going more into that direction, and then adding EAs to our skill set, because I have two myself, and like, it's like my Iron Man suit. Like, I get so much more done in the day. It's like Dustin amplified when you have a really good EA. And so I think that's the next thing that gets me really excited, is also after we solve problem A, well, what's the next problem? It's now the owner has a bunch of time, but they're still bogged down with other little small admin tasks and scheduling a post on social media or booking their travel or replying to emails. And it's like, that's something I enjoy helping them get organized and working with an EA side by side. So that's our next, you know, like, adventure, and our next, you know, a chapter is going more broad with our offering and helping people in new ways, man. So I'm excited.
Yeah, well, it seems like you've got a lot on your plate and you still look fit and healthy. So yeah, Dustin, it's been great chatting to you, and hopefully we'll chat to you once you have set up these other businesses. And maybe then we can talk about some of the platforms and tools that you use in terms of lead generation. And I know a lot of it is just getting on the phone, but you know, what is the email, what are the email platforms, what are the CRM platforms, etc. So yeah, it's been very enlightening for me. And lastly, where can I send folks who should get in touch with you, Dustin?
Yeah, so if they are in the fitness industry, go to gymreinforcements.com. If they're not in the fitness industry, go to remotereinforcements.com. And that's where you can learn about the different, you know, services that we offer. But main thing is service-based. Like that, we don't do e-com. We don't do, you know, anything like that. Products, like we're definitely all in on the service industry. So that's who we are, what we do. And so we'd love to help anybody who needs any help with that stuff.
Awesome. I'll put the link in the bio so folks can get in touch.
Thanks for having me.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth.